So that last song you just heard was from a new one from Cloud Nothings called I'm Not Part of Me. It was a single released a few days ago off of their new album called Here and Nowhere Else that is not out yet, but will be coming out in April on Car Park Records. Should be a good one. They're always a fun band to listen to. Anyway, that's the end of Chips and Dip. Thanks for listening, and you can check out my podcast if you missed the show on the CITR website podcast under Chips and Dip. Stay tuned and keep listening because Language to Language is next with your hosts Woody and Gunarji.
Moxie, Mota, Mina, Kiwade, no, Kutsi, Mina, Sawi, no, Kisi, Giga, we no, Kidusky, no, hey, 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 Paxi motak mina kiwede no kutsi mina sawi no kisi kigawi no kitaski no
Well, good afternoon again. Today's Thursday, January 30th? My God, we're almost at the end of the month. Budgeting, I guess, is where you can make the end of the money meet the end of the month. So I'm not too sure if my ends are going to meet this time. But anyway, welcome to Language to Language. We're still in the process of developing our show. Fortunately, we have the internet and... I've been looking at some of the faculty here at UBC and some of the things that they're interested in. And so we're going to try to get some of them on here from time to time. And I was looking at some of the things that they're interested in. For example, there's one man here who's a senior instructor. His area is in classical, Near Eastern, and religious studies. You know, we can take a look at some of those things, so you know how they might contrast or complement indigenous ways. So, what I want to do is not look at Native people as an example of how we're going to solve all our problems with nature and all the rest. But really, to put a human face on the Native people, on us. And also to look at some of the things that are a normal part of our world, but they're expressed in different ways. And so one of the assistant professors here that's in First Nation Studies and Political Science, you know, he's written a book on Indigenous Thought and Politics, Radical Social and Political Thought, and is currently writing a book on Indigenous peoples and recognition politics in Canada. Another man, you know, he's a cultural consultant to one of the local bands. Another one is whose work focuses on Indigenous women in leadership, child welfare, Indigenous methodologies, trauma, race, culture, social justice, activism. Another one is... looking at Aboriginal studies and Indigenous Native North American literature, cultural studies and literal history and speculative history. I'm not too sure what that was, speculative history. But anyway, and another is working, or his interests include global Indigenous peoples politics, Indigenous diplomacy, Indigenous social movements, and critical international relations. So people don't really stop and think that, you hear people talking about sovereignty and government to government, nation to nation relations, but never stop to think that we had at one time 500 language groups here in just in North America, not counting the ones in Mesoamerica. You go down toward the South Pole. And so people had to develop ways in which to interact with each other, to communicate with each other with some of the languages that weren't even close to being their own. For example, Hopi is a linguistic isolate, and so is Haida. So there's no languages related to ours. So people had to learn to speak each other's languages or find ways of communicating. We weren't in a natural state of war. That whole concept of war, it was so different here in the Western Hemisphere than from, well, the Eastern Hemisphere. People there had developed over, 8,000-10,000 years, the concept of unconditional surrender, which means that I have to conquer or dominate my enemy or totally annihilate him. Because once you get into that politics where you're talking about cash economies, now everything has, we'll say, a dollar value. So people are trying to amass personal wealth. And the only way to do it is to take it from somebody else. In Haida, I was being trained. There's a story. It's more than just a story. It's a history called Sauk Igang. I am telling the story of all the humans, not just us Haidas. Hatai is just a human person. Hadas is all of them, all of the. That's when we're usually just speaking about ourselves, but we can also use it to refer to all of humanity. So in Tlauk Egang, it tells of where we lived at a time when the atmosphere was Sengai La Hilkiagn. It was always warm or always pleasant, and it describes the area in which we humans lived. It was long, a body of salt water. I don't know if it was a salt lake or ocean, but the water was salty and there was no surf. And also, the history doesn't talk about tides. What it does tell is that the area was a crescent-shaped beach, that the walk from one end to the middle was 5 to 6 days' walk. And at the end of each end of that beach, I guess you'd call escarpments, these huge rock outcroppings or high cliffs. And then behind, and it seems to me that this was facing toward the north from the way it's described in the story. There were low mountains. And on the other side of the mountains were what they called the meat eaters, these large animals that couldn't get to the humans because of the mountains and because of the rock cliffs on each end. So people lived a fairly idyllic life. There was plenty of food. It grew right there. You could pick it off of shrubs or off of vines. You could wade out in the water and get some food from there. And most of the water was sort of like an artesian well, I guess you might say. The water was welling up. There were areas that were kind of like swamps, more like fens, I guess you'd call them, where you've got reeds and ponds of water. So anyway, and then the trees were very tall, at least I tell it in the first person because that's the way it was told to me, because we were taught it not by the words, but it was taught in such a way that we experienced these things rather than memorized. So these trees were tall. They had no limbs, sort of like a palm tree, but it grew straight up. And then the top of it was more like the cap of a mushroom. And people lived on the ground underneath those trees, where they dug shallow depressions and then lined it with branches, so it's more like a nest, like big birds nesting on the ground. And when it did rain, the water would run off of those treetops so that it didn't just fill up the nest. And by having the shallow depressions and the branches lining it, you didn't get much water in there. So anyway, this is the way people lived their lives, and they would go and take food from the from the ocean that they'd see birds eating. Some things would make them sick. Sometimes people actually died from that. But they were curious as to which ones could they eat and which ones could they not, and start putting things on the rocks to see if the birds would eat them. And sometimes birds didn't eat all of them, and they dried there on the rocks. So they found that they could add extra food over there and let it dry and then eat it later. So anyway, one day this medicine person in Haida we call Shaga. Shaga is the one who's responsible for the mind, the body, the soul of all the humans of his group, I'll put it that way. Came to the people and said something was wrong, and he was going to go find out what it was. So he went to the highest place there, and it said that every land has its own magic, but you can't get in touch with all of those, because if you're down on the ground and there's hills in the way, you can't, it won't come through there. So he had to go up there, and on top of that hill, he could turn in a circle and he could see the horizon in all directions. So he was at the center of a large circle. And each area within the different wedges of that circle, there was different magic. And so this person would clean his mind, take out the impurities. The mind had to be clear and clean. And then when that person got the message from those magic places, it wouldn't become adulterated by the information that was left behind. So anyway, Shaga was gone quite a while. Came back, called the people together, and told them that this thing was going to happen, that the earth was going to shake real hard, and these things would come out of the sky, and for them to get ready. There were cliffs up on the sides of this mountain where the children sometimes played. And once in a while, they'd go in one and they wouldn't come out. There's a big hole in there or something they fall into. So they sort of knew which ones to stay away from. But to get ready, they dried lots of food. They took plants, you know, some of those things that were growing. And I can visualize what some of them look like, but I don't know any names for them. And it's said that there's certain foods, there's four or five kinds of foods that we have to have to be able to survive when the climate change reaches that point. But anyway, so people started moving things up into those caves. They'd put down a layer of like branches and then put food, and then put another layer of branches and then food on top of that. I guess that was so the air would pass through it. But anyway, while they're doing that, Shaga stopped them and said that there's something I got to bring to your attention or warn you. He told them that when you begin accumulating things, amassing things, you have to be careful, because if you're not, the worm could get in your mind and create a need for stuff you don't need. And if that happens, you become tskuju. Tskuju, sometimes it's called greedy, but greedy is a value judgment. But it says you'll start grabbing. Even if you don't want it, you're going to grab it. You can't help yourself. You just keep grabbing. And so that's what all wars are fought over, somebody grabbing something that doesn't belong to them, or they're trying to grab something from somebody that's grabbed it from somebody else. So we just keep grabbing and grabbing and grabbing. And to protect against it, you always have to give something back. Excuse me. It doesn't mean if I take something that I simply replace it. What that means is, say, my people are hungry. We're all hungry. And so we go out looking for food. An animal presents itself, or a large fish is there, or lots of berries or other kind of fruit. Anyway, food. And so when presented, we always say, I'm going to give this one back. You never take that first one. Never take the first one, because that is a guarantee to the ones after you that there's always one more. So in giving back that way. So when I was first being introduced to Christianity and I saw that story about Adam and Eve, and it talks about how that serpent tempted Eve into eating of that fruit of life. And I thought to myself, they don't know their history. Because what happened there, it wasn't that Eve led humankind into sin. What it was that worm, that serpent, got into their minds and created a need for something they didn't need, which was clothing. Why would they need to cover themselves? The only being to see them is their Creator, and Creator made them. So why should their naked bodies be an abomination to the one that created them? It didn't make sense to me, and I still don't quite understand it. But somebody once said to me when I mentioned this, that's Satan. And I said, yeah, you got it. Creating a need for some you don't need, that's advertising. So anyway, so that's why we always give back the first one. And when you start accumulating things, you gotta be careful that it doesn't get in your mind and create a need for things you don't need. So that's what happened with these cash economies. Is people keep wanting more and more. And you can ask any person that I would say is of average intelligence, if there's such a thing. How much money is too much? Well, if you can't answer that, how much is enough? And again, you might not get an answer to that, because you can never have too much. In fact, that's what we're trained to believe. I can never have too much. And so we have a world that's running into problems. The world itself isn't running into a problem. The world's going to be here. But the things that populate it, many of the things probably won't, because we believe we can never have too much. Look how many millionaires we have, billionaires. What's the point? I don't get it. Some people have 4 or 5 houses, some 3 or 4 cars. One woman had 1,000 pairs of shoes. Me, I got a cat, a 20-year-old automobile, a wife in her 60s. Yeah. I guess I listened to this one Ukrainian lady was a school teacher, and one of her kids, she said, asked, "How old are you?" She said, "I'm older, and I'm as old as my tongue, but older than my teeth." So you got some, I'm rambling on and on here. How about you, Robin? You got anything to add to any of this or any comments?
Oh, boy. I'm just busy listening, taking it all in. I'm, as usual, scribbling down the jokes, mm-hmm. trying to remember those.
Well, see, there's a method to this madness. It's called Kudingaikina. That means your mind is hot. In other words, as long as I can keep your spirits high, you're in a state of enjoyment, your mind is open. And so you're going to remember almost everything I tell you, because you're not getting ahead of me. You're not trying to draw any conclusions. You're not really aware of yourself. So I stop thinking about myself, and I'm focused on what I'm listening to. So that's how it was done. Mm-hmm. And so try it sometimes. You know, people go around looking like a bear with a sore paw, and it's almost like it hurts to smile. And a lot of times I use humor to really tell me about a person. If I tell them some idiotic joke, and they get this, oh, you know, the groan thing they do. Well, this is a person who makes judgments rather than enjoys things. Oh. And so the Aaron one, I'm glad to see that my host is here now.
Yeah, your co-host.
Boy, that rain really slowed you down, didn't it?
It did. And wow. I just decided to stop and have something to eat, and it set me back a half an hour.
Good Lord.
Yeah, I left at 1 downtown East Side.
Wow.
Missed the bus. Transit system sucks.
No, I was just talking about that story about in Haida, it's called Tlaloc Egong, mm-hmm. you know, telling the story of the humans. Mm-hmm. I was looking at just going through some of the topics from some of these people here at UBC that are of Aboriginal descent that teach here. And I don't want to limit this to them, but in this list of peoples, I found some of the topics that they're interested in and things they're studying are, I think, would really give more of a human face to us rather than those natives, you know, that type of thing. And I was mentioning, you know, this one person here, for example, was interests include global indigenous peoples' politics, indigenous diplomacy, indigenous social movements, and critical international relations. And published in articles both indigenous studies and international relations. People don't realize, you know, that, like I said, there was over 500 language groups, and so people had to develop these diplomacy, and we didn't have the constant war.
And maybe the diplomacy can be the fifth D word when addressing First Nations people. We saw from and heard from Duncan McHugh, you know, who works for CBC, that the only time First Nations people will get covered is when you're addressing the four Ds, dancing, drumming, drunk, and dead. Now we have diplomacy on our side.
Yeah, well, I just found him on the list here, too, here at UBC mm-hmm. in journalism, and he's a reporter for CBC TV News.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been doing my research.
Good. And so these are some of the people that we'll be bringing on board, well, of language to language?
I've contacted 3 or 4 of them just to find out if they're interested.
Mm-hmm.
And as we develop more of this, there's one person in here has been looking at the not only the strategies, but the technologies people are using to revitalize their languages. What's this other one here? Focus on Indigenous Feminists, I think it is. Related Native Women's Intellectual History and Contemporary Native Literature. And then this one person's main areas of research are Indigenous education, oral tradition and storytelling. So that's somewhere we can go with that. And then there's Indigenous technologies, Indigenous perspectives and environment and sustainability. And one person has been doing studies and did either a master's or a PhD on global climate change. And then enhanced understandings of Indigenous theories on place and what this offers to the transformative education. Some of them, I'm not quite too sure what I'm reading. One woman from Hawaii explores what types of technological issues. Okay, that's one that people are using to revitalize and maintain and promote their languages. So they're quite a wide variety of topics here. And so I really like that. I talked to Dana Claxton, and she said she'd be available for two Thursdays, one in February and one in March.
And she's a multimedia artist.
Yeah. Yeah.
A curator.
So, yeah. So anyway, that's what I've done. I've gone and contacted four of them, just to find out if they're interested. And what I need to know, though, is how much time we're going to have on that UNESCO International Mother Tongue Day.
We only have an hour, and, oh, actually, we have 3 hours, pardon me, and we'll be broadcasting from Co-op Radio and inviting other stations to pick up on our radio feed. Mm-hmm. And so we have, I believe it's 3 hours.
On which days?
3 o'clock. Well, it's on International Language Day. On the 21st? Day,
Saturday. The 21st is a Friday, isn't it?
Yeah, Friday. So this is good because we'll be able to take 3 hours and celebrate mm-hmm. International Language Day. And by next week, I'll be able to let you know exactly what time.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it was on a Saturday. If you look at Co-op Radio's schedule, on a Saturday, they actually exercise Language Day. Like on a weekly basis there, we have a 3-hour Latin American show and a couple of other language programs on that day. Wow. The whole day on Saturday is filled with language programming, with the exception of Red Eye, which is 3 hours of current affairs.
Red Eye. Huh. Mm. Yeah, while I was trying to figure out a way to promote this International Mother Tongue Day, where we get people to actually go and do something on these days with their language. Maybe just get people to use one or two words of their language for the whole, you know, all day long. Just mm-hmm. use as many of the words from your language as you can.
Yeah, scream "No Enbridge Pipeline" at the top of your lungs everywhere you go, and I'll be happy with that. So well, that everybody understands.
So we'll get Robin's father here again.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's cool.
Mr. Alam.
So anyway, that's what we was looking at, this stuff, you know, as to who might, I see words I don't understand, like the word pedagogy, mm-hmm. what's that mean?
I think it's the something to do with teaching, so the tradition of teaching, maybe, something like that.
Well, I mm-hmm. thought peda was a prefix or something like that for children. Children's studies.
So little language here and
little
there.
Little language here and there.
Probably beginners. Basic language lessons.
See, there was... Oh, here we have...
Well, you know, maybe what we could do is put out your email to the people. If there are listeners out there who have an interest in language revitalization within their communities and understand the importance of language and communicating in the language, whether it be through storytelling or language lessons, or we could give your email and they can contact you if they would like to participate in celebrating Language Day with us.
My email is Heidaman, Haidaman, at telus.net.
Heidaman.
Heidaman.
Under the couch?
Uh-huh.
Anywhere you like. Hide him in the closet if you want. Heidaman.
Yeah, I started writing Tales from Heidabed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, back in the 1980s or sometime around there, there was a program called Love American Style.
Uh-huh.
And so I started modeling it after that. There was one story on there that just, I guess, it for some reason, it just tickled me. It was called Deny, Deny, Deny.
Mm-hmm.
A woman walks
Another
into
D
her
word.
House or into a hotel room, mm-hmm. opens the door, and there's her husband in bed with another woman. So she begins berating the husband. He gets out of the bed, moves over to her, and he keeps moving until her back is to the bed while she's still yelling at him. And while her back is to the bed, the woman in bed gets out and gets dressed, and he continues to turn, so the woman makes the bed, she gets dressed, and then she eases her way out of the door, and then he turns around, he points at this bed that's all made up and says, "What are you talking about?" So deny, deny, deny.
Yeah.
I that was my beginning point, you know.
A Heidaman.
About, no. No. Tales
he
from
hides a woman.
Tales from a Heidabed, you know. Mm-hmm. Just some of these, like.
Well, I saw a musician performing. He just happens to be Native. Really good-looking man, older man. And he's
not interested.
He's banging away on his keyboard. And as he's doing it, a woman is standing in front of him performing for him, basically. And his lady was in the same, you know, place as all of this is happening, and nobody saw a thing. Like, it just goes to show you, you can do stuff like that right in front of somebody and they won't see it for whatever reason. Like, when they're in denial, I guess. It's not happening.
When I was in the U.S. Navy, my ship pulled into West Palm Beach in Florida, and some of us sailors, you know, it was really a very difficult thing to do, but we went to a nightclub, you know, where they serve alcohol, and which was really sort of against our beliefs. Anyway, there was a comedian in there playing a piano, and his name was Woody Woodbury.
Oh, yeah.
And he would turn and talk to the audience. There was a young couple sitting kind of in the front row, and he said, "Oh, you're newlyweds." And the woman said, "Well, how can you tell?" He said, "Well, judging from the rice in your hair, you're either newlyweds or you got in a food fight in a Chinese restaurant." And then he said, "Well, there's really a dead giveaway." He said, "Your husband there, I can see his pajamas underneath his coat. He's your folks just waiting for the maid to change the bed so you can go back in." But he just kept going on. One lady, you know, he asked if they had any children. "No, we don't have any children." "How long have you been married?" 5 years. "Oh, 5 years, no children," and so on like that. Finally, you know, he's playing the piano, and then he does this boom on the piano. He says, "I can tell you how to have children." She says, "How's that?" He says, "Put more men on a job." When they're playing the piano.
"Well, I can tell you how not to have children. Do you want to know?"
"Yeah."
"Cross your legs." "Indian birth control." "Be a lady at all times."
Well, yeah. You know, humans keep being born. One of the things I was going to mention was I was reading a novel. It was dealing with the British Navy back in the 1800s. Two sea captains are sitting at a place in the Mediterranean, sitting out at a table drinking. And sailors went by with these two sailors with two women there, beautiful women. And one of them says, "You know," he says, "we English are a strange breed. We're always drawn to beauty, but continue to produce ugly children." And I was thinking about Camilla, is that her name? Prince Charles's girlfriend?
Yeah.
She's not ugly, she's just not beautiful.
Well, she's no Princess Diana.
No, I guess that's...
We can safely say that.
That's sort of an unfair comparison, I guess. Everybody has their own. So anyway, that's what I was just talking about, some of the topics we'd like to be able to put here so that we can have more of a discussion of, rather than, those natives don't pay taxes, those natives can fish, those natives this and those natives that. You know, let's bring it down to another plane, to where we talk about our filmmakers, we talk about the people who write books, about scholars here at the university, lawyers, doctors, there's one here in applied sciences. And
well, part of that is our responsibility, and that's kind of what we're doing here.
Yeah.
We're stepping up to the mic and trying to represent. What we need is more people to do that, more people who are language speakers, cultural keepers, knowledge keepers and speakers, because that is what will give us insight as we rebuild our culture.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a phase where we have to revitalize. And then by doing that, others in the community will recognize us as more than street people.
Mm-hmm.
I got into a cab today and had this conversation with a person who didn't find it offensive to say to me that a lot of First Nations people don't work. He might as well have said that we were lazy and we're drunks. And I said, "That's not true. That's what you know. That's what you see. You're a taxi driver. You're picking up people who don't want to drink and drive, mm-hmm. who are out there for a night having fun or whatever. But that isn't all we are. We have so much to offer, as you just pointed out,
mm-hmm.
you know, the faculty here at UBC is
you know what I would have said to that cab driver? I detect a twinge of envy.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, when some of these cab drivers, you ask them about their own homelands and about the British Empire. Why did you guys sell out to the British Empire? Because the first thing you did is grab a British passport and you come over here. And we never went to your country. We don't complain about what's going on in your country. If yours is so good, what are you doing here? And it's the same way. I work with a program called Strengthening Fathers. And one of the videos that we showed the guys the other night was where people were talking about fathers. Just where, what is the father's role? It's changed a bit, but it's essentially the same thing yet. And one guy was saying, you know, family is the heart of everything. You can speak your language, you can eat all your traditional foods, you can dance all your dances and beat all this stuff. But if you have no family, he says, you have no culture. And so culture's more than just all those things. Culture's your family. That's the whole heart of everything. And when people are starting to teach their kids their language and teaching these things, one of the things one of the people in there said was, well, it took us a long time to get to this state. It's going to take us a lot longer to get back. But I don't think that's true. I don't agree with that, because when you take a look at what happened over the last 150 years or so, when children were taken as early as 2 years of age, and you take generation after generation of these kids and indoctrinate them into believing that everything that of their world is bad, wrong, dirty, evil, stupid, ugly, they begin to internalize that. But if you find a generation is suddenly giving the children compliments, it's sort of like on Facebook, I put it on there that whatever you say to your children becomes their inner voice. And my daughter immediately put a message on her, says, Pop, I remember when you told me I was beautiful and smart. And so you put that message in a child's mind, they're going to put it in their children's minds. They're going to put it in the minds of other people's children. For some reason, this one here is going to, I think, going to multiply much faster than just beating people down and making them feel so awful about themselves. So I think the healing process can begin with just simple little things like that. But again, the key is the family. Because when a man walks away from his family, he's destroying his culture right there. He can get out there and do all the fancy speeches and all the protesting and all the stuff that he wants to do. But if he has no family, in Haida, that's what the word for slave means. Haldanga means you have no family. You know, you don't even really exist. So, you know, when people want to always complain about someone else, that means that they're trying to make themselves feel bigger. And I think that's what it is. When I see Harper going to the extent that he's going, dumping millions of dollars into, not dumping, but putting millions of dollars available for refugee camps and siding with the Israelis and doing these things, I think it makes him feel superior.
And then giving them a whole whack of money so that they can build a better judicial system by the sound of it.
Well, what they want to do is create more trade where people buy Canadian products. But again, but they won't do that here. You don't see these people going around the world. Many of them go to adopt children. They don't go and find white babies. They go find people of color. And here in this country and the United States, there are a lot of homeless people, a lot of orphans. A lot of children need families. So why don't we take care of what we have here rather than going around and showing the world what good people we are while we're at home? Or We've got lace curtains on the windows so nobody will know about the horrible things that are going behind the curtains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we've been covering a lot of issues around child apprehension on the program Access TV. And we've had a couple of panels. We invited Carol Martin and a lady by the name of Marilyn McKee and Melanie LaCoy. Some of them are doing work in the community to support and advocate for women or families who have had their children apprehended. We've also been following the James Louis and Lonnie Edmonds versus Canada. Mm-hmm. Their appeal went through. It got accepted. So that's really big news. We'll be following up on that. And then we've recently went up to Lillooet. Last week I gave you a call in while I was on the road. We were talking to Michelle Edwards, who is the current chief of Lillooet. We talked to a couple of the former mayors, and we also talked to the people in the city, to the people, the village people, I guess you might want to call them, of Lillooet. And it was really, really great to see these people working together for one cause, uh-huh. right, which is consultation with the people and their concerns around the intake. So I brought you a recording. Would you like to listen to it, Woody?
Sure, sure would.
Okay, great. And here's Michelle Edwards.
The application came in. DFO had approved it, and there was an environmental assessment done. And I think that's really all that was done. I haven't even really seen any of this work even yet. I got to review an environmental assessment, and I picked that apart even on the first two pages. I started picking that apart. And I'm not I don't have letters behind my name, but I've been working in fisheries, forestry, archaeology, and been negotiating with my leadership for about 20 years now. So I do have a good background. My community has a great background of being stewards of our own land. We've created a lot of habitat in our community that shows that we are exercising our title and rights to manage our own lands. And that goes a long way with anybody as a government. And you can see from what is being done here that we definitely would not have agreed to this work. It does not go in with the work we have. We've got all kinds of different salmon species that come up here. But you can see that this intake system is going to be built into the river. When I've talked to people, they said, it's got to be buried under the river, so you won't even see it. I'm going, are you guys nuts? You actually want to go in there and build something into this river that has been very important to us for a number of years, and you can see why. It's a small tributary from the mouth of the Fraser up to the dams. We have four dams that impact this river system. So it's about 5 kilometers long, and it's a very healthy, needed system for the salmon that come up here. BC Hydro actually turns off the canal, so the smolts don't go down the canal, and they'll come down the creek. So we're able to count them for 6 weeks every year. And just to have them come down and then get trapped in a water intake, it defeats the purpose of what we're trying to do. And BC Hydro, we have a working relationship with them. We've signed a Statlium Hydro agreement. It was a 20-year negotiation. I filed an appeal to the Environmental Appeal Board, so they received that. Along with it, I submitted an affidavit. So we did hear back from the Environmental Appeal Board that the district and, I guess, the province, Dave Horn, will be able to come in and, question me. But they're also able to submit a statement so I can then probably question them, I hope, on this whole appeal. But what it's going to come down to with the province is they didn't consult with us, so they're kind of hooped there. The district actually had an obligation to even notify us. They're there. We're over there. It would have taken nothing for them to drive down all their plans that they had and showed us those back in 2012, because since 2012, they've had conceptual designs of this.
How have the neighboring territories reacted to the blockade that you
have? We're getting a lot of support from them.
Yeah.
At the first day, we did have a lot of people here. Unfortunately, we've had a few deaths, and respectfully, people are going to go and they're going to mourn, but we know we have their support, and you can see that we have tons of town people mm-hmm. that come down with people, honking, people yeah. bringing us food and water. And had a very unfortunate incident this morning when I got here. I was standing around the fire, and it was about 7:15, and it was like a gunshot mm-hmm. went off and actually got hit on my leg. Oh, and then, and we were all standing around like, what was that? And we couldn't comprehend that, you know, somebody come and put bullets in the, into our fire. And then 15 minutes later, another one went off, and it wasn't till about maybe 10 we actually found a casing on there. And I thought, really? You know, people would actually do this. But for people to go to that is very desperate. And it's telling me that they don't have a leg to stand on, that they're getting very fearful of that they didn't do the right thing. We as Statlium are doing work all over the territory, and we're doing it to benefit the wildlife, the water, the plants, the animals, and you know, and then us as people. If we don't have land to manage and to look after that provides for us, we start losing our existence. We start losing our way of life. So the longer we're doing this, the more the generations are going to be benefiting.
How have the neighboring territories reacted to the blockade that you
have? We're getting a lot of support from them.
Yeah.
You know, at the first day, we did have a lot of people here. Unfortunately, we've had a few deaths. And respectfully, you know, people are going to go and they're going to mourn. But we know we have their support. And you can see that we have tons of town people that come down with people, you know, honking, people bringing us food and water. And
sorry, we're back on the air at CITR 90.1 FM, Woody Morrison.
101.9.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I was 90.1 is CJSF.
Oh, I don't know.
Another campus radio station at SFU. And then there's 100.5, which is Co-op Radio, and that's a community radio station, and 101.9.
You know, one of the things we talk about is sometimes we want to use the airwaves to get out our own message. But I think instead of me having to give everybody what my opinions are, I go find other people who can say the same things, but with their own own way of saying it. So that's partly what we do, I guess, is we go and find people who are like-minded. But I also like to find people who have contrary opinions, because I think I learn more from them than I do from the people who agree with me. Even if I don't like what I hear, but I can't really learn if I just keep hearing the same tune over and over and over again. So anyway, so these are quite a mix of people that I want to bring on a show. Also, I'd like to find some other people. Poets, people who, they don't necessarily have to be Native people, but just people who can talk about the world of communication. How do they understand each other? How do we get along? Because we sure know how not to get along.
Oh, that's for sure. Especially us Indians.
It doesn't take any real brain power to do that. But it does take a little bit of effort to get along. I had a little bit of a situation yesterday where something irritated me, and without...
Was it me?
I didn't see you yesterday, did I?
Oh, yes. Yesterday was Wednesday.
Yeah. But anyway, I kind of got a little bit upset. Then I thought to myself, what's the point of getting upset? It didn't serve any purpose. It didn't make me feel any better, and it didn't convey my message any better. So I guess I just have to pay attention. I want to learn about tact. I was reading that tact is the ability to tell somebody to go to hell and they look forward to the journey.
Yeah. Learn that.
Well, diplomacy is kind of a funny thing too, because diplomacy is a way of communicating so that you don't actually say what it is you want. You say certain words that will give a signal that the other person can either pick up or ignore. But when you make a flat statement about what you want, then you usually end up in a conflict. So you kind of, it's sort of like dancing around each other until you both get the same message. I don't know, it's kind of...
I was famous for diplomacy in my when I was a kid, you know. As I got older, I became less diplomatic. Is it the same for you, Woody?
I guess so. You know, the older I got, the more I just said, damn it, this is what I want. Uh-huh. And I don't agree with you. And as far as I'm concerned, being stupid is a great civil right, so be as stupid as you want.
But be diplomatic about it.
But it never applied to me, see? Yeah.
No.
So I wasn't stupid. Everybody else was.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've had some great shows here to begin with. You ended up with Bo Deck.
Yeah.
You know, this man is an international artist, knows his language, his culture, and probably your language and culture.
Probably.
You know, that's how powerful that man is. He's a knowledge keeper, and he's a great speaker, and his carvings are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, true to a T, you know, traditional as his grandfathers and his grandfathers before him. And then after that, you had Soul Carvers, and that was made up of five different band members who were all carvers. You had a couple of Lil Watts in here, and you also had some people who were Ojibwe and...
we had Robin's father.
Robin's father, Rabbi Alam.
Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful. And then last week we heard a little bit from Michelle Edwards. Mm-hmm. And so you're really only into your sixth episode, and, you know, it's a really great show and a great initiative, and we should be hearing from a lot of people nationally and internationally with ideas about language revitalization or maintenance, and we can share some culture with each other.
Yeah, and then if any of you caller listeners would... if you ever have a question about something, you know, and you hear something on here and you want to know more about it, yeah, give us a call, you know, see if we can answer your questions, but or find somebody that can answer it.
And don't forget, Hobie A's coming up.
That is right.
You're going to be dancing at Hobie A.
Yeah.
Right?
Last night we had
Niska New Year.
Chief Willie, what's his last name?
Willie Walkus.
Walker. Yeah, he's leaving Vancouver to go back home. And so there was sort of a celebration last night at West Coast Night. And I was thinking, when I was watching the people out there dancing, how sad it is that people not from our world never get a chance to see people doing things they do in their world.
Mm-hmm.
To, say, social workers that just a client, and there's only a fixed amount of the world that they're permitted to occupy. So they don't come out and see this person in this part of this world.
Well, I told you that story about this dude that walked up to me one day when I was waiting for a taxi on the sidewalk. And he came up, he had a banjo in his hand, and he said to me, "Oh, gee, you know, I would like to talk to you a little bit. Are you Native?" I said, "Yes, I am." He goes, "Well, I've tried to get along with you and your people," he says, and "but every time I try, I get into an argument or I offend you in some way." And I go, "Well, where do you usually meet us?" And he said, "In a bar." And I was like, "Well, there you go. Why don't you try coming?"